I dropped out of high school when I was 16 as soon as I could. I have this idea. I have relentless belief in it now. I think that this could be really cool. And honestly, I think, you know, this could change the world.
You're listening to the Blacktop Banter Podcast, the premier podcast in the asphalt industry, made for contractors with contractors.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Blacktop Banter. And some of these connections, man, that we're making in the industry are like tying to wild branches on this tree of networking that we've created here at Blacktop Banter. One of these goes all the way back to before Dirt World Summit, where a gentleman named Sean reached out to me on LinkedIn and was like, hey, we're thinking about doing a podcast. We don't know anything. Can I call you and you can give me some tips? I'm like, yeah, we can do that. Had a great conversation with Sean, met Sean then at Dirt World, was on their podcast as a guest as well. And then I was like, hey, I'd love to return the favor. Can I get somebody from Frenter over here to tell us more about what they do? And he's like, how about the big dog? So here we are, man. And I have Zach here today, and it's going to be a great podcast. So we're looking forward to it. Zach is the founder of Frenter. They're building digital tools for people building in the real world. Zach founded Frenter at 14 years old. And I was going to read like the normal thing where I get into it. And I'm like, this is the about section from their LinkedIn or whatever. And as we got going, Zach's like, you know, let me just phrase this how I want to. So I'm going to kick it over to him. First of all, I would love for you to tell us what Frenter is. And then I'm going to ask you some questions about 14-year-old Zach.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. So Frenter, as you said, like that's the core of what we do. We build tools for construction, made by construction, tailored to construction companies. And I think that what that looks like right now is automated asset tracking and equipment management. So that's where's your equipment? What is it doing? Telematics data and understanding everything that's going on. But then more importantly, how does that data change how you guys think about your business? So when equipment's being used more, do you start to look at increasing deployment or increasing the inventory in some sites and some rental place stores? Or do you start to draw back from that because of low utilization? Also understanding the cost of maintenance, your return on investment, and all of this data, and actually playing around with machine learning and starting to predict things. So we do everything that involves in your operations, equipment tracking, and building a system of record for that. But all that matters is that we want to build it for construction, tailored to construction.
Yeah, the idea is these pieces of equipment cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And like, there's a gray area there. Like, you don't know if it's still being profitable, all the maintenance and all the work you're doing on it, the parts, and if it's better off, you just should be renting versus doing that. My big question is, I have a 13-year-old son named Eli. I can 100% guarantee the thought about whether or not the efficiency with which our equipment at my asphalt company is running has never entered that kid's brain. So dial me back a little bit. How did this happen? Like, how did this thought enter your brain of like, oh, here's an issue here. I think I need to develop a way to make this a lot more efficient and help the construction world out. Were you brought up in that world? Like, I got to know, man. Like, how does that thought enter your brain at that age, man?
Yeah, no, I get asked about, you know, my upbringing, my parents' background. Parents are both lawyers by trade. My mother was a politician, and my father was in, like, the movie business. So very not, not very far from
construction. So wild.
Yeah.
That's so wild, man.
It's a funny background, but I think that because of that, and they've both done a lot of different things in their career, they were pretty, yeah, I'll jump into that. But basically back then I was like, okay, well, I want to build something. I knew that I played around with some projects. I used to sell, you know, some smartwatches. My dog was famous on Instagram. He had about 27,000 followers. So I started the dog cookie company. And then a couple other thoughts I had were, you know, okay, I want to get into tech. I know it's interesting. So one day I went to my attic. I was like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to write on this. I had this little board. I still have the poster board to this day, but it was like every idea I could think of until it spiderwebs into a company. So I started to write stuff down. I was like, okay, Uber, sharing economy, rentals. And I really loved like the sharing economy. I thought it was super interesting. And then that developed into, okay, people rent cars. Why can't they rent tools? construction. And so that was my initial thought. It was, let's build a little marketplace where someone can go and rent out their tools. That grew across Canada in a couple months to hundreds of thousands of tools, thousands of users. And we spent maybe a couple hundred bucks on some Google ads and marketing.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like it grew at that size. Was that because the need was so big in the market or it just had never been like that before? And it had never happened, or was it like, the marketing push and whatnot? But you kind of answered that one where it was like, now we spend a couple hundred bucks on Google ads, but yeah. Like how does it even get known and then spread like that? How did that happen?
I think that it was fine. And this was not, you know, you met Sean, our head of marketing, and you know, that's a different level of complexity around the marketing side of things. But when all I knew from my last business was, when I post a picture of my dog, it wasn't content that said, come buy anything. It was just, here's a picture I thought is cool. I posted that, and the click-through rate was like 0.1 cent per click-through to our site. Like, it was something ridiculous like that in terms of low cost. And so I said, okay, maybe I can post something that's like, it's not come rent equipment. So I posted this thing during COVID that said, you know, take back summer. It was like hashtag take back summer campaign. And like, you know, you've been stuck inside. Let's go rent things. Let's go get outside. Let's go, you know, take back summer. And so that exploded with, I think, hundreds of thousands, if not maybe a million, like kind of
crazy
views and impressions. And so that's what pushed a lot of the usage. And then from there, I was able to go to companies and say, hey, look at how many users and growth we're having. Come list your equipment on our site for free marketing. And that's how we got a lot of the supply.
Nuts, man. So where did you target first? Like when you were like, hey, we have what we call MVPs, right? I know, yep. A little bit, man. So we have an MVP. Like where do you target right away? Like my mind is just boggling. Like if I had that, I'd be like, okay, where do I go first? It's not my local equipment dealer, I don't think.
Yeah. And it wasn't actually construction companies and rental companies in the beginning. It was the party rental store down the street, things like that. And we had some crazy stuff on there. We had like flamethrowers.
Yes.
A bunch of stuff. And it was cool. And then but the issue was, and why we pivoted, is nobody rented anything. Like there was a lot of demand, like obscene amounts of demand. Like you can rent whatever you want. Nobody rented anything. Like we actually bought another company because we were growing so quick. We bought another marketplace on the West Coast that had partnerships and had items and things like that. So through that kind of acquisition, we kept growing. And then we were like, all right, this isn't working, but we have a lot of businesses. What's something else we can do? And then in that process, I had known a man named John Risley, he's a billionaire in Canada. He's a very successful entrepreneur who I admire a lot. He had founded the Clearwater Seafoods, which is like the largest shellfish company in North America. Okay. At the time, and still is. And so he's from Halifax. I pitched him my idea for a marketplace a year ago, and he said he didn't like it, but he kept in touch. And then when I came back to him and said, hey, John, learned a lot. Here's what I'm thinking. I want to do a new business. And you know, we kind of had no money at this point. We're running out of the little bit of friends and family money that I had. Like, what do you want to invest? And he was like, yep, I'll give you 50 grand. And that was, you know, the first investment. Wow. That we got. And then took me a couple months and put together about 270K Canadian in funding. And then we're off to the races with kind of this new idea when I was 15. So,
when you had the first iteration of it, how did you generate revenue at that point? Like before you had the first investment, because you said you acquired a company.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and I think that it's important to, like, for me, when I look back, I recognize how fortunate I was with people of giving their time and money. So like with that acquisition, I gave them, you know, Frontier stock. And then I said, yeah, we owe you cash based off a future raise we're going to do. So it was like an IOU.
Yeah.
And like it worked, like, in the agreement, of course. As soon as I had that money, I had to pay them. But like, it was a bet on them to be like, hey, we're going to go with this guy. They seem to be growing well. They were looking to get out of that industry. And so they were like, well, we're going to take a bet. We're going to move forward with me. And similarly, my CRO, now, like, he worked for free for months on end for, you know, a 15-year-old.
He believed it. He believed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before we get too far into Frontier, I want to stay in your childhood, if that's okay. Yeah. You said you went to the attic and got on the whiteboard and threw all these ideas at the whiteboard until something formed. Where did that come from? Like, where did that action come from? Did you have mentorship? Were you always interested in business? Like, Like, you know, even for you to be like, you know, 15 years old and got a CRO, like for me, I'm like, okay. Like, that's, you know, this is movie style, essentially, Zach, what we're talking about. So, how did that happen? How did you get the idea to do that? Did you have a mentor that was like, hey, you got to get to a board, start doing this, a business mentor? And then, were you always that way? Were you always business oriented? Did you study it? Do you read? Like, what do you do that has made you this way early on?
Yeah. No, it's funny because, like, I can hop in a room now and I can talk construction like nobody else. And I've just been in it now. Like, that's like 40% of my life has been engulfed in it, which is awesome. But I meet a lot of these Stanford kids. I'm in San Francisco now. And I'm like, holy shit, these guys can school me on everything else. And I honestly don't read. I listen to podcasts. I listen to Blacktop. I listen to like the Dirt Talk by like Aaron Witt. Like, yep. I listen to a lot. Like, that's the content I consume right now. And then maybe a couple of business podcasts, but like never was into books. I never thought that like I could read something that was written 5 years ago and act on it and build something now. It's shit moves so fast nowadays that it has to be like, what's a podcast I listened to yesterday? Even that's starting to get outdated already because things are changing. So I didn't have any mentors until I did something. And I think that that's where, you know, I had early people that helped me, and I have mentors after I'd started the company. And
it's wild, dude.
Press, but yeah, not before.
It was just natural.
Yeah.
It just naturally came to you to go do these things and think this way and process this way. Yeah. Wow, bro. There's, you know, yeah, I mean, it's no different. Like, we say it's different, but it's no different than anyone who has a natural talent in anything else, you know, and we recognize it early and you're like, dang, they're early. We're going to see, my son and I are going to see Messi play, right? Yeah. In August. And, like, what's that?
In the Montreal game or?
No, Chicago. Okay. Yeah, MLS. Yeah, yeah. Okay, down Chicago versus Inter Miami. But like when you go back and they're like, yeah, when he was really early, like that's all he did. And like that's what he focused on. And he was just good early on. Like, you know, we try to get Messi out here to Seal Coat. Good luck. Like, we try to get him to pave. Good luck. But, you know, that was his natural thing and went with it. So it's very cool to kind of see how it morphed somewhat your raw, I guess, interest and talent and strategy to do it, because these are strategies like going to that whiteboard and formulating plans. Like, we do that here and it takes three of us to get at the whiteboard, look at it, really strip it down and be like, this is what we're going to do next. And this is how we're going to do it. Now, one of the three is not my 13-year-old son. I can promise you that. Right. So it's very interesting and it's a very cool just to kind of get a peek into how that happened. And it's very cool to see where it's going from here. But now I kind of want to understand how it transitioned then to the construction space and the heavy equipment, because you went and you pitched and got your first investment. And then where do we go from there?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's funny, like, I see how it evolved. And so I'll give you a little bit more context. Like, I dropped out of high school when I was 16, as soon as I could. As soon as I could. And that was tricky because my mom, I told you she was a politics. She was the Minister of Education in Canada. So that's why there was some complexity to that, because it was someone that's been preaching education and trying to reform it, and like everything we can do to figure out how to make this better has to step back and say, okay, now that I'm out of politics, like, and like, you know, like I've been in this life and talking, and she was also the Minister of Children's Affairs. So she's seen every side of kind of how kids can evolve, and, you know, the juvenile detention centers, and she used to go mentor there, and like, she's done everything. And so I thought it was interesting when she had to take a step back and say, okay, for my own kid, is university, is even high school the right path? For both my parents are educated and, you know, lawyers, they went to law school. And so it's like that was a big shift.
Yeah.
And so I still, you know, I had to sit down with them one day and I was like, look, like, I have this idea. I have relentless belief in it now. I think I can figure it out. But at the end of the day, I can't make the decision. I can't drop out for myself. You guys have to make it. And like, you know, I think that this could be really cool. And honestly, I think my speech was like, this could, you know, this could change the world, and, you know, change my life. So that, and, you know, they ended up believing in me. And I think there's always, I appreciate the respect, because, you know, sometimes your kid gives a speech and you're like, well, cool, thanks.
Sales. Yeah. That's sales 101 right there. Tug on the heartstrings. Yep. Change the world and get them to buy in. No, dude, kudos to them. right? Especially going against the, I mean, that's not abrasive, right? Your mom's a minister of education up there, and you're like, yeah, I don't really want to get educated by the high school or, yeah, or college or wherever. So it's unique, man. That's just a, it's a crazy ride. All right. So we'll transition into when that happened, but I kind of want to ask you, like, did they believe in you at that point, or did you notice a change once you started to see Frenter really start to take off? Were they like, oh, all right? Or was that belief right at that moment when you made your pitch of like, hey, you guys got to drop me out of school?
Yeah. My dad was always like my biggest believer, cool, for sure. I think like, and like, I say that now where the shoe has flipped and my, like, my dad, of course, is still 100% my believer, but my mom is like, she's definitely more reserved for sure at the beginning. And like, okay, are we actually going to let our kid drop out? She ended up being the one that made the big push for that. And, you know, with her experience, was able to kind of lobby the school board and be like, hey, look, this is what he has to do. Yep. And, you know, it's no different to what you said earlier. Like, if your kid was messy, you're going to figure out a way to, you know, do some school online. If your kid was a child actor, they let you do that. Yep. You know, your kid's an entrepreneur, why can't you figure out a way to do that? So, but yeah, they're big believers. You know, my grandparents too were early believers, and they were, you know, my grandparents wrote me my first kind of friends and family check before all of our fundraising and all of our rounds. And like, you know, I appreciated that. It was, for me, it was an interesting dilemma, because it's like, now, you know, the investment is doing great, but it's before, you know, when you're at family dinner, like, how's the investment doing? How are things?
Like, yeah, that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man. We want to know how it's going. I have a question before we get into that transition in Frenter that I was thinking of. Yes, you have a great idea. Yes, you understand how to make it a minimum viable product. But on the business side of that, like, you have people that you owe shares to, you have people that are investing, structuring business and whatnot. How do you manage that at 14, 15, 16 and have never been down that road and don't have parents that are like, this is what a business structure looks like? How did you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what was nice is structurally, like, because I had some, you know, family lawyers, basically, like, I had some legal counsel there, which helped me make not.
Oh, you know, sure.
Yeah. Help me with deals. But everything else was new to me. Like, and I'm from, you know, a city where people had raised money. People had built tech companies. We've built now also one of the biggest ones in the city, and we're not there anymore. You know, we're in Silicon Valley now. But like, I think that, yeah, it's weird. I think what I was fortunate about is I raised things in stages. And so yeah, it was like, you know, first 270K, then we raised a little bit more, then we raised a little bit more, and then we raised, you know, a lot. And like, I think because of that, it let me learn, make mistakes. And it was like isolated mistakes, as opposed to, I see now, I don't, you know, it's still rare for young people to raise large amounts of money. But if I do see it, it's like, okay, I have some friends that maybe they're, you know, 3-4 years older than me and had to raise, when they were like 20, they raised like $5 million, and like, wow, that's great, and burned through it all. Like, yeah, that's a pretty normal thing where you get so much money, you think it's infinite. And then you haven't, like, you know, it goes quick. $250,000 is a lot of money. But when you start to think about hiring people and, like, you know,
correct,
all that kind of stuff, it goes by quick. So
Yeah. Especially like with the team you're building, like, you think about guys that are specialized with, you know, we call it trades, but essentially they're specialized in what their focus is in business and whatnot. They're not cheap. You get 10 of them. There's $1 million, yep, like, gone, and you get them for a year.
I'm incredibly proud of the Blacktop Banner Edition seal coating unit, produced in partnership with KM International and available in both 550 and 700 gallon versions. Custom built on the same frame as their bulletproof hot boxes, I work closely with KM to design what I believe is the best seal coating unit on the market, a unit designed by a contractor for contractors. Learn more about the unit and to see a walkthrough of the entire unit by visiting kminternational.com.
If you're serious about efficiency and performance, listen up. The Craftco SuperShot 125 is not just a melter, it's a strategic pavement maintenance advantage. Quick startups, fume-free, automatic agitator shutoff, a splash-proof lid, and pumping on demand, these features are essential for any serious asphalt maintenance contractor. So don't settle for mediocrity. Elevate your game with the Craftco SuperShot line of melters by visiting craftco.com today.
In my opinion, Dynapack CC900G Roller is the best roller on the market for driveway and small parking lot paving contractors. The seismic technology in these rollers is unbeatable for the smoothness and compaction they provide, and I choose the Dynapack CC900G over the little yellow roller that you're used to seeing every single time. But don't just take my word for it. Check them out in person at Pavex and World of Asphalt, or visit Dynapack.com to find a dealer near you.
Hey, Blacktop Banner fans, this is Michael with Aquafault. Say goodbye to potholes and roadway damage without the need for large crews, heavy equipment, or toxic chemicals. Aquafault is the only permanent repair material for asphalt and concrete that uses water. And installation is simple. Just pour, add water, and tamp. It's that easy. An Aquafault repair can be open to traffic immediately and fully sealed within 24 hours. Plus, the product is backed by a 3-year warranty and made in the USA. Visit aquafault.com. That's AQUAPHALT.com to learn more.
In the past year, Jobber has been our CRM of choice at Wiscote, and it's made our world exponentially better efficiency-wise. The request to quote and quote to invoice process is seamless and professional. The scheduling aspect keeps us on point and the team leaders moving throughout the day from project to project, while the timesheet feature tracks the team members' hours. For our small seal coating company, it has helped build the solid foundation we can scale from. Jobber is now a sponsor of Blacktop Banter and helps bring this show to you. With this partnership, Jobber is offering an exclusive savings to BB listeners of 20% off for 6 months. To take advantage of this, find the Jobber link in the show description and get to improving your process today.
Hi, contractors. It's Kyla from Wiscote. We use Stencil Plus for all of our pavement marking stencils. Alphabet letters, numbers, directional arrows, handicap markings, you name it. We use it and we get it all from Stencil Plus. Right now, for a limited time, you can save 10% on your stencil order by using code BB10 during checkout at stencilplus.com or by calling 877-372-6055.
World of Asphalt is the leading asphalt trade show and conference, and it will be taking place on March 25th through the 27th, 2024, in Nashville, Tennessee. From mainline to maintenance, the show will be your one-stop shop to see everything the asphalt industry has to offer. Registration is now open, and listeners can save 20% off registration with the code BB20 when they register on worldofasphalt.com.
Dude, I've never seen as many software, tech, construction startups and companies in the construction industry and asphalt industry as within the last couple of years. But I want to get to the point where I want to go back to where you got your investment for $50K the first time. That was when you were like, hey, I want it to be construction focused. What happened from that point to where you started to get the bigger investment? Like what happened in the structure and the build of Frenter from there on?
So we built out this kind of e-commerce play for rental companies, for construction companies. Our first client was actually like a mining blasting mat rental company out in Ontario. And, you know, built it out for them and around their needs. And then kind of we started to realize like, okay, we're competing with the ERP, Texada's, Point of Rentals of the world. And those are awesome companies. You know, we have good relationships with them now, but I think back then it was like, okay, we're competing with them. Feels like we're building a better mousetrap. These guys have been in the industry for 30 years. They do a great job. Why are we building something slightly better? And I think we see a lot of that when you look at the competitive landscape. It's here's a slightly shinier ERP system. Here's a slicker operating system that looks nicer.
Yes.
Like, Whoopi doesn't change anything for my business. Why am I going to rip out the tried and true, you know, Texada or those old school guys?
Yeah. So, I mean, we see it a lot with CRMs, right? Yep. In our industry, like, it's implemented. All of our data is in there. Everything's in there because you can, you know, there's a lot of our CRMs, our softwares are starting to do mapping and whatnot. And it's like, well, because you have one extra feature that's kind of cool, I'm not going to just rip the guts out of everything we've built to throw this in there and then try to rebuild around it. So like you said, we're creating a better mousetrap, I guess, but we're starting to see that in the construction space. Is that because this is probably a shitty question, man, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And there's no way that you're going to answer me yes, but the only things I can come up with is like, it must be cheap and easy to build a software company to fill the need if the need, you know, you're mimicking what's been done already, right? Like if we're going to build a car or a truck, pretty much we have a truck in front of us. We can just go ahead and rip it apart, put it back together and be like, oh, this is how it's built. Okay, we're going to slap a cool label on it, market it different. You know, what do I want to say? What's the Squatch soap? You know, yeah. Squatch soap. It's like, dude, yeah. it's just effing soap. I love but Squatch. Man, dude, I do too. And it's like, well, I know there's just as good as soap that smells just good, but man, I love the Squatch commercials. Yeah. Right. So, maybe it is just marketing. Yeah. Let me in on that a little bit, Zach. Yeah. Like, why are we seeing that so much? What's that like being in that field, competing? I mean, you all are competing.
Yeah. So I think when, and I'll answer kind of my previous take there, and then that'll answer this question. It's like we at Frontier and why we moved away from the e-commerce and moved into asset management. And then that's where, you know, we were really able to raise more money and solve it. It's only, you can only raise money if you're solving a problem. VCs aren't dumb. They see thousands, tens of thousands of companies a year, and the best investors in the world know what's up. And so when we finally were able to pivot and say, okay, I want to build a bear trap. I want to build something that actually solves a problem and is different. Mm-hmm. And nobody is thinking about asset management and automation in the way that we're thinking about it. And that's what we do at Frontier now. And so that's how we differentiate ourselves. Now back to like the competitive landscape, hardware and software are both commoditized. They're super commoditized. Commoditized, I mean, it's like, it's cheap to build. I see something, I have a team that can probably go replicate it. I see hardware, maybe I'm not going to build it, but I can go find it and buy it from someone else. Mm-hmm. And so what we tried to do was like the best business to be in right now is hardware enabled SaaS. It's like hardware that powers and pulls data because it's so cheap to get it. I can almost give it away to all my customers. And so you have access to like robust thousands of data points. And then we build amazing software on top of that, that actually then takes this really cheap data now that you have access to that you didn't have access to 5-10 years ago because it was too expensive. And yeah. Then we give it to you and then we help you with your business. So that's what we try to do with this and differentiate ourselves. Cause yeah, like any software thing that you want to build, we can build it. And hardware, same thing if you have enough money.
But it's like, so we're talking about, so to bring this back, right, to people who can follow along and I think I'm following along. You're gonna have to school me. Like I'm a knucklehead, dude. I'm just a grinder. I got calluses on my hands and sealer under my fingernails still probably. The idea is we have this piece of equipment. Let's just say it's a bulldozer, John Deere bulldozer, right? And I'm driving this thing and I'm like, well, I wonder how much life is left in this thing. I wonder how the hydraulic pump is doing over on this side. I wonder how this is doing with my sensors over here. I never really know. Guess I'll never know. Yeah. You take the unknown that's there, put a piece of hardware into it. That piece of hardware will shoot the information, the data over to a software that you've created that pulls that information out. We're able to present that to the owner of the John Deere bulldozer. And they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't know this, or this. And this makes it more efficient. So I can see these problems ahead of time before they come. We can take care of it right now so we don't have downtime in the field. We're not losing, the job isn't costing us more. We're being more efficient. We can just get it in, get it taken care of. We can plan ahead, buy the part. So when it does happen, whatever it is, am I following along? Is that correct?
That's it. Like it's the proactive versus the reactive. It's like, if this broke, I got to fix it. And I'm going to call everybody on my team and scramble to move items around. And like, that's how it's been. And that's fine. And I think like, there's also something pretty awesome about like how people can come together and fix those issues pretty quick. But now it's like when I'm 100, 1,000 unit fleet, how do we get ahead of that? And then what's cool when you have that data is like you can ask our system questions like, okay, what happens if I buy another two bulldozers? Like what's my return on investment? And we'll tell you. It'll tell you in our system.
So get like, out.
Yeah.
Dang, dude, that's sick. Yeah, that's crazy, man. So it's wild to think about that type of thing. I don't want to ask you what the next iteration is, but I have a feeling with the way your mind works, you've probably already been throwing this, or whether you still got that piece of poster board or whiteboard or whatever. But you know, the next iteration would be it essentially would alert the user before. Like there's no in between, right? Like it would just be, they pull up their software. Maybe this already happens. I don't know. They pull up their software and it tells them, they have somebody who can read it and it tells them what to do. I don't really know, dude. The only thing after that I can think is that the machine fixes itself, right? And we got AI or robots or whatever. But am I thinking about that correctly? Like that's the next iteration?
Yeah. I think what we're seeing is like with fleets that look now people are starting to have automated like autonomous bulldozers now, like the
drive. Yeah, yeah.
Like, so in that case, we can figure out how we can fix for those like that. And I think right now it's like, first it was our first tool that we ever built was like GPS tracking and geofencing. It was like, where's your shit? What is it doing? That's like, mm-hmm. that's base. Then you got to go, okay, how is it working? So then that's engine data. Right. And then we're getting into like, how do we then take that data and help you be better, be smarter, and improve, make you more money? I mean, that's all matters. Let's save you money. Yeah. Let's make you more money and let's, you know, get shit going. And so I think that eventually it's going to build tools to speed that up. So whether like we can order the parts for you before it breaks down
or sick.
Like that kind of stuff. And that's what we're doing.
Damn, dude, it's so sick, dude. That like, I don't think I hope people who are listening are jazzed up like I am about it. Right. Cause it's like, dude, that is sick. So here's the other question I have for you, dude. We're completely off the conversation topics, but, it's a great conversation. So I'm going to stay with it. How small of a piece of equipment, and then how large of a piece of equipment? I mean, what are we talking here? Because, our roller, you know, Thanks to Dynapack, who's a sponsor of Blacktop Banter, our CC900G might have a hookup, right, where we can hook that bad boy up and it can show us something. But also, it makes me think about a working mill, like a giant mill, or maybe it's a mining operation. We have a tumbler, right, or whatever it could be. Like, where's the smallest, and where does it end?
Yeah. I mean, we can do through like CAN bus, we can do like a tiny generator if you have that on the site, a pump. We can do
that's like crazy
small, like, you know, the kind of one ton, you know, like even like the Kubota one ton excavators that they have.
What about like pickup trucks and stuff?
Yeah, we can do actually with trucks, we can do some pretty badass things. We can do like GPS.
Dude, sign me up, bro. I'm in, dude. Sign me up. Damn, you still got that sales bug. Dang, dude, that sucker is sick. So
you know,
sick.
Like the PC2000s, like the massive like behemoths, yeah, like those we're those are the ones we're figuring out how to do, because there's three or four engines in those ones.
Yeah,
but we can do it. Like, and I think that's where, you know, I mean, that's like a building at that point, with a building with a bucket at that point. But
bro,
we can anything, but like we want to do everything construction. And like once we do a type of equipment once, we can do it 90% faster the next time, like for the install, for the servicing, for the customer success.
Dang, dude, it's sick. All right, well, we got to get out of that one, or we're going to be stuck in there forever, because I have about 1,000 questions coming down the pipeline. All right, we're going to get back on track here. Topic number three. I think this is where you and I can kind of connect a little bit. An entrepreneur yourself, as am I. Let's not get it twisted. The scales are a little bit different. But there's parallels, man. Like there's a lot you and I've been able to connect in this conversation. So, you're in a construction space, you talk to, entrepreneurs, business owners, your teams do, I'm sure you guys come back and be like, these are the needs of, these business owners and these entrepreneurs, whether they're small and they apparently only need a generator to run a drill and we can help them track their generator, or, they're running, you know, six backhoes and 20 dump trucks. What are the parallels that you see between the tech entrepreneurship run that you've had and some of these construction space entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I meet people, and I know some people that like they were 19 when they started their construction company, or like they were 20. And like some of these are like, I know a guy, it was an oil company, kind of oil and gas company. So a little different, but like 19. And now that's $1 billion in revenue company. And like, you know, it's been 40 years, 50 years. It's been a while, but like there's still that parallel of like, okay, you can start it young. So that's one thing but I think more importantly, I got blown away when I got into this industry of like, there's still the problem, like product market fit. You got to build a product and the market has to solve for it. And like whether you got rental companies that only like, there's rental companies that only do like blasting mats, for instance. I was like, wow, that's, and they do $80 million in revenue and that's all they do. And like then you got one that's like they're hyper fixated on generators, or you got like, I think that the solving a problem and then the operations, whether you got United that's just like, we have everything, here you go,
yeah, or, yeah,
and it's gonna be super cheap, but we're probably gonna be, you know, a different level of customer service because we can't service everybody. We have 2 million units. Yeah. Or you got like All Choice Rentals out in, you know, Canada that's famous for their amazing customer service. So I think that like that's, but you know, maybe it's going to be more expensive. So I think that's where you got like, there's different strategies. There's different ways you can play things. The marketing's different. And then everybody wants to build a company that, that solves a problem. And I think that's what we can all level set on. It's like, we all want to solve issues. If you're not going to solve issues, get the fuck out because you're not providing value.
1,000%. Yeah. Yeah. I think what we see, right, is that trade-off that you're talking about. For an example, we'll talk about my company, Dubuque Asphalt, which is one of my companies. We provide excellent customer service and quality at a higher price point because it takes that. It takes a higher price point in order to deliver that. And in a market where that's not necessarily the case, there's a problem there, right? When I would go down there, we would vacation there. It's only an hour away from where our home base is for Wiscote Asphalt Maintenance. We would get there and I'd look at this blacktop. I'm like, dude, this could have been done a lot better. I don't know that it was ever crack filled, ever seal coated, ever patched. We're down on a river bottom in Dubuque for the most part. Some of it's up in the Bluffs. And I'm like, but I know there's asphalt maintenance companies around here. And we would go see it. And you, like, when you looked at a new lot, you're like, dude, they missed the mark bad. And this is going to be tough. Like, they threw money away. So that's like, we built the marketing around that of like, yes, you're going to pay a higher price point, but yet the quality, the customer service, and the efficiency is going to be a lot better. You can go back to the cheap stuff where they can probably get it done really quick and it's slopped on your garage doors or it's on your walkway or sidewalk or whatever. But this is the choice. We're going to solve this problem when we do that one. I think that's what we see, right, with your business and with Frenter because, yeah, I guess I could get separate hardwares and try to monitor it somewhat myself. But I, like I said, I'm a grunt, dude. Like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. Like, you know, my team here at BB, we were talking the other day and I'm like, yeah, if you guys all left right now, I'd be screwed. Like, I'm literally, we're into the zone of like Marvin's unknown. Like, this is my lane. This is my lift of what I do on my team. This is what Chris, who's our producer and our operation guy, this is what he does. Kyla does the admin. So any revenue we bring in, she knows how to put that in and distribute it where it goes. This guy has no clue, dude. So I'm like, okay. That's another similarity I see because, you know, we'll talk about Sean, on your team. That's his lane. That's what he does. He's good at it. Let's do that. Let's set it up. You take care of it. You tell me. I literally walk in here and put these headphones on, turn the mic on. Like, okay, I did my research on who I'm talking to today. Yeah. Don't ask me to do anything else because I'm not the guy, bro. But it, for me, the curiosity of entrepreneurship, no matter the lane, has always been unique. And don't get me wrong, there's guys in my industry, I'm one of them, and we're looking at guys like Gary Vee at Bezos and at Andy Frisella and like these guys that that have built companies. And we read books, right? We read Jobs books, right? Steve Jobs' books. We read Think and Grow Rich. So we're not just, this is how we do it. We provide a service and that's it. We do get invested into the same type of strategy and structure, I think, that you all do on the entrepreneurship or the tech entrepreneurship side. It's just that when we get down to it, there's a product or a service that we're trying to build or creating or producing that solves a problem. The structure of how you bring that to the market is pretty different, but also very similar, right? Is that, am I on the right page? Is this what we're talking about?
Yeah. No, that's it. Like, yeah, but we're like, just well said for a sec. I just want like people to like think about that because it's the same. And then I think what's cool about it now is it's so easy for, you know, for you guys as, you know, the end customer for tech companies to be like, okay, this guy's full of shit. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much. You get that in the industry. Some Silicon Valley guys, like, I'll tell you a secret. I don't know how to code. Never learned how to code. No idea how to program.
Same, dude. We got it in common, but
but built a tech company because I figured out, you know, smart people around me versus like you get a lot of these programmers from Silicon Valley, never been on a job site, never wore a pair of work boots, that want to build time management for construction or want to build the next, you know, CRM. And it's like, cool, you did some market research, you found a couple people, and you built one more feature.
Yeah, that's why I don't hit
for me.
Yeah, dude, that's why those ones don't hit, dude. The best stuff we have. And I think this is why Blacktop Banner hits, our newsletter hits really good. I write articles for a couple magazines and they seem to hit. They We have a meeting here to renew a contract for article writing coming up. It's by a contractor for contractors. So more than likely, what you're getting from the contractor resonates really well with you. Where in our space, the engineers that design our blueprints in the construction world, dude, every time you open, you're like, this, there's no way this is going to work. Yeah. Like, there's no way. Like, and that's that disconnect, right? Where they went to engineering school, they didn't actually get in the field. They don't understand proper drainage. Like, the road is elevated at a higher level where you're trying to pitch this parking lot. Yeah. The water is literally going to set at the entrance. We can't do that. We got to figure something else out. There's a little bit of disconnect. I want to ask you something, and this is, you know, it could have to do with tech, could have to do with everything, but we always ask this from every guest here. I don't want to keep you too long. What would be some general advice that you have either learned on your own or you've taken and you're like, dude, that's the nugget for my journey at the, up to this point?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, like, I used to like be a sponge. Like, I used to say a lot. I used to do interviews talking about that. And I think that still holds true to this day. I used to be like, absorb as much information as possible. With a little bit more experience now, and, you know, I'm still figuring shit out too. But like, with more, I think now it's, you know, I forgot the other part of a sponge, which is like, you got to let some shit out too.
Yeah. And so
I think we absorb as much info as possible. You listen to everybody. You talk to every single person. I mean, you guys, you know, you hear every sales pitch, but at the end of the day, some of that is going to be go kind of through one ear or the other. And yeah, just because it's not valuable, it's maybe not relevant for you. But I think everybody from no matter what industry can maybe add a little thing to you. So I think that, you know, I've always tried to appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of people reach out to me on LinkedIn. I take the calls because I think it's going to be valuable either way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, dude. I'm super sponge this podcast episode. I can tell you that much. I'm going to have to let some back out and soak it back up and then let it back out and soak it back up after we get done with this one. My mind's going to be running, dude. I think we got that in common. And that's just one of those things where it's a good thing and a bad thing sometimes to try to pin it all down and figure it all out. You mentioned LinkedIn. Is that the best place for people to follow along on your journey?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm pretty active on there. I like it. I think it's a pretty awesome community on there. And like we post a lot of cool content on construction all the time. So
cool. And then we can go to Frenter.com if we want to check out anything with Frenter.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Dude, I really appreciate you being on here. I'm going to read this sign off and then we're going to say goodbye to Zach today. As always, you can find this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Hop over to blacktopbanter.com. When you're there, there's some tabs there you can check out. One of them is BBSG, the Blacktop Banter Success Group, which is a community of contractors within the asphalt industry and construction industry. And we do Zoom calls every month. We have a private chat group, private Facebook group. There's exclusive vendor discounts throughout the industry. There's a chance at national contract work. And we do a couple meetups specifically for BBSG each year. Had a couple badass ones this year where we raced go-karts. We actually raced NASCAR driver Spencer Boyd at the last one, and he kicked the shit out of all of us. Shout out, Spencer. You're a pro. We know. While you're there, also, there's a newsletter, Blacktop Banter newsletter called Between the Lines. It's written by contractors for contractors with a few words from sponsors and people who support us and our mission here at Blacktop Banter. Please sign up for that. We'd love to be able to send that over to you. As always, please check out missionimpact.com. Mission Impact is a nonprofit in Guatemala where we provide fuel-efficient stoves, clean water, and wheelchairs designed for people who no longer have access to that stuff or have never had access to that stuff in that area. So it helps out a lot. If you feel the need to give, please do that at missionimpact.com. As always, you can find us on social media. Type in Blacktop Banter anywhere. You can find me on LinkedIn, Marvin Joles. Blacktop Banter is on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I think we're on Threads. I don't know. We're trying to get everywhere now. They keep making new software companies and apps to put us on. All right, man. That's it, dude. Zach, crazy conversation. I know for a fact you have to come back because my mind's going to have a bunch of questions. I'd love to talk to you more about that. Dude, we really appreciate you being here.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Marvin. This has been pretty awesome. Yeah. Big fan of you guys. Been a big fan for a while. So it's cool to, it's pretty awesome to be on here. I see you talk on my feed like every day. So,
dude, we try to. We're excited because the snow is going to melt. We're going to be able to put real content out and less ads. So that's nice. Dude, I really appreciate you being here. For myself here in the Blacktop Banter studio and for Zach LaBerge. See, I know that. We sponsor somebody with the last name LaBerge. He's from Quebec. I think Montreal, yeah. Quebec, maybe. He's a street luge guy. Yeah, he's going to the world. So, dude, we're supporting the LeBerges, I guess. All right, for myself and for Zach, this is Black Dot Banter. And as always, we speak asphalt. Peace. Hey, everybody, Marvin here from Blacktop Banter. And if you enjoy the podcast and what we've been bringing to the industry, you can support us through a one-time or recurring donation at blacktopbanter.com. There we have a support tab. You click that and choose your path from there. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do us a favor and leave a review there for us as well. As always, we speak asphalt, and thanks for your support. This episode of Blacktop Banter is brought to you by Crafto, the world's leading manufacturer of packaged pavement preservation materials and equipment for the asphalt industry. Learn more at craftco.com.